Hi everyone, welcome to another Mom and Making Movie podcast hosted by David Hogan, Fergus Finley O'Donnell and myself, Adam Butler. We have a spooktacular special this week with Halloween just around the corner. So draw the curtains, turn off the lights and get ready to hear some terrifying movie reviews. And I mean that in more ways than one. So I'm with my co-host, David Hogan, David and Hogan, and Fergus and Finley O'Donnell.
He's on fire here today,
Ferg. What an opening.
Got to a great start. So what I posed to my co-host this week was for our horror spooktacular special, go off and find a movie on Rotten Tomatoes with a score greater than 90%, the best one you can find, and then potentially the worst one you could find with a score of 10% or less, and see what kind of nice mix and matching of classics and the worst movies ever made you could do. So, Gogan, I'll throw it straight over to you because last week, for anyone who listened to our 90s movie action pop quiz, would remember that unfortunately you came third and were given a couple of forfeit movies. So I think this week you just wanted to take the lead with one of them, considering it was right under the 10% line.
Yeah, and thanks for passing on to me first.
This way putting it as well, wasn't it? It's like not that you came last or anything, you came third.
That was the first point I was going to make. I believe I was robbed last week. Well, inquiry, I believe, was meant to happen, but...
just lucky we let you away with watching the one
Now. This comes under the category of horror, and it nearly meets the criteria. We have to find a horror movie under 10% on Rotten Tomatoes. This gets 11%. I want to find that person who gave it that extra percent and shoot them in the head, because this doesn't deserve any percentage. It's that bad. Just to make it clear, my movie that I reviewed this week is Hobgoblins, the 1988 classic. It is not a classic. And if you can't remember the description from last week, I'll just give a brief one here. And it's not the best description. A group of tiny little creatures end up going on a terrifying rampage after escaping from a studio vault. As discussed, I think on last week as well, Ferg was mentioning that you can't really find a good description for this. It's not really a surprise, because when you do watch the movie, you're kind of scratching your head to actually figure out what the fuck is going on. mainly what I would add to that is there's a security guard who's been guarding this old film studio building for 30 years. And he's made it his responsibility to keep these hobgoblins locked away from risk of escaping and terrifying the public. Long story short, someone tries to rob the building, gets access to the room that the hobgoblins are locked in, and the young security guard finds out that these hobgoblins exist, and he's then given the responsibility to track them down and get them back. It's then we're introduced to this young security guard's girlfriend and three friends. So here's my first point. The casting, horrendous. The old security guard, God help him, so bad. The young security guard, probably the best out of a bad bunch, but really bad. And then his three friends, Jesus Christ. Just bad acting. Bad acting, and the script they were given doesn't really help, but even with a bad script, a good actor can make do. Ferg, you know all about that. But
I mean, like, you can only do so much what's put in front of you. But at the same time, like, yeah, when you mix in people who can't do shit, then it's an awful mix. And I think that's all three of our bad films.
And in fairness, like, they're not really helped. I looked this up. It's a low budget. I think it was 15 grand. And it really shows, you know, I think we do take that for certain things for granted. For instance, the music. The music feels like it's taken from one of those free platforms, you know, that they don't want to be copyrighting anyone, and they just be like, okay, we can use this song for this. That's really obvious.
Like our opening theme for the podcast.
We don't have a budget, though.
Yes.
The other thing, the editing. I've never noticed this before with a movie. The editing is so bad. Like, for instance, he pulls up, this young security guard pulls up in his car, and you can tell from when the car stops in one scene and then when they've decided, oh no, we won't keep rolling it. We'll take another edit of him getting out of the car. It's just so obvious. You just have to see how obvious it is. And that's using a really light example. There's other scenes where, a spoiler, a grenade is thrown in a nightclub, and the army character of the movie jumps on it. And usually, from what I've seen in movies, when you jump on a character, it implodes and pretty much your guts, your body gets blown to pieces. Next scene, he's on fire from the grenade blowing up. It's just, it's so bad, but it's funny.
Well, there's obviously to light someone on fire than to do the special effects of like something blowing up. so the budget, just light Mitch on fire. Does he know that?
And then you're kind of like, oh, okay, at least he killed someone off out of the group. Oh no, at the end, he just comes up with a few scratches on his arms. I was like, what? I could literally review this movie from start to finish, each scene. I was saying to you, Ferg, earlier on, I think I was 40 minutes in, and I had about three quarters of a full page written down of notes. It's so bad. I wouldn't wish this on my worst enemy. I was thinking at the start, like, there's a very funny scene of the Hobgoblins in a golf cart chasing the two security guards. It's hilarious. But that's the only funny scene. I was like, oh, maybe this is so bad, it's actually good. It's not. It's so bad. And I saw a line or a review earlier on. I'm just trying to find it here. It's the worst movie of all time. It actually caused you pain to watch it. And I would stand by that review. It's that bad. And it hurt my eyes and my head. And I don't feel well after watching it. It was that bad. I had so many notes here. I just want to make sure I don't leave anything ridiculous out. Just the budget just jumps out on this. It's just so bad.
And like, how would you compare it to say Gremlins?
Thank you very much. I did a bit of research on Gremlins. Hobgoblins was made in 88, Gremlins was 84. In fairness to Hobgoblins, Gremlins had 11 million of a budget to work with, which would have been a lot of money back then. And you can see that, you know. I'm not saying Gremlins still holds up as well as, you know, today, but I'd still easily watch Gremlins over ever trying to watch this again. And the Hobgoblins themselves, they're not really that scary. You know, like, for a horror movie, you're like, put a bit of effort into the actual Hobgoblin. And I didn't really look into this, but it's something that I wouldn't mind looking into. How they use the Hobgoblins in the movie. Like, there's certain scenes when they're in a car, and I'm like, I feel like that's just, that's, you know, someone has the Hobgoblin on their arm, and they're just using it like that. And I was looking at it, and you're not even paying attention to the scene. You're just trying to say, it's like, what's going on here with the Hobgoblin? It doesn't look right. So I presume with a 15,000 budget, and obviously back in the 80s, you didn't really have, you know, CGI or the best effects, but it was just really obvious that there was no money put into that scene as well. But look, I could talk about this, as I said, for another 30 minutes all night. It's so bad, but I know, Ferg, you have something that you want to compare it with, and it's keeping in line with the whole genre that we've picked today, and not just horror movies, but creature horror movies.
Weird little creatures.
I want to get the name of your movie right, because I know you're saying a different movie earlier on, but I'll leave it to you to introduce it.
Well, I wanted to actually just, I was looking up before I even get into mine, when I was looking up the, like, some pictures from Hobgoblins. Obviously, I was the one that recommended it, and that became the film series as well. Like, there's like three or four of them.
There's actually Hobgoblins 2 that's only been released, about 10 years ago, but...
Jesus Christ. I could see there's like a picture of the army guy. He's just wearing a camouflage t-shirt, and the Hobgoblin's just like on him. And then like there's a little gif of them driving the golf cart. It looks hilarious. Like, is it so bad it's not even funny?
Sorry. And you've just reminded me of that one of the points I did want to say. It is so bad, it's not funny. And what jumped out at me as well is this, it's an hour and a half long in length. There's a scene where they go to this club and they take a seat and this band is introduced. The band plays a full song, and they're just sitting there, and it goes to like one of the waitresses dancing and back to the band singing. I'm thinking, did they pay this band to play the song and to be like, oh no, your whole song can be played in this, but we won't pay you to perform. You know, you'll get your credit from actually being able to perform a full song.
Was the song good?
It was actually all right.
what was the band?
I could skip a bit of the movie here. Like, if nothing's going to happen and it's just them performing.
And the Hobgoblins are at the club.
Yeah, but like, the Hobgoblins are at the club. They come in about another 5 minutes after the song has finished. So, like, it's like 2 minutes of this song. How long is the song these days? 2 minutes 30 of a whole song being played. And it's just kind of like, what the hell's going on here? Why is the band playing? The main cast are just sitting down. They're not featured in this scene whatsoever. I'm like, I just thought it was really strange.
How did the Hobgoblins get into the club? Did they like wait in line and get like stamped and pay like an entry fee?
There's the loopholes as well. You never see how the Hobgoblins get into any of the places apart from the car. Like, they're attracted to light, but you still don't get to see them getting into the actual buildings.
Is there any explanation of why they were in the vault?
No.
That's a lazy writing.
I was wondering that too, and I was wondering, like, for some reason the Wizard of Oz pops into my head, because you know where they used, I don't know what the correct terminology here is, I'm gonna say little people for the Wizard of Oz, and I was kind of thinking, like, is it like kind of like a joke that maybe they use hobgoblins for the Wizard of Oz instead?
Like
for the munchkins.
We've all seen the monkeys, the scripting is so lazy and the ending scene is perfect. I don't really want to ruin it for anyone who might watch this. I don't really know many people will. But as I was saying at the start, there's a security guard who's been working there his whole life to protect, you know, the town from these hobgoblins. And then at the end, he gets fired for like not protecting the building or whatever, and he goes to the young security guard. You never asked me what I used to do before I became a security guard. Well, I worked in the army and my specialty was demolition. And he blows up the building with the hobgoblins in it. I was like, why didn't you do that 30 years ago?
Yeah, exactly. Why are they in the vault? So there was obviously some sort of hobgoblin attack that happened years before, and he has to keep them contained. Like, that's the big problem with those type of movies. Like, there's like, they go for something like with Gremlins, right? It's like, all right, it like they explain at the start, it's just this weird creature from somewhere in like the Himalayas, and your man explains the rules. Don't get it wet. Don't feed it after fucking 12 o'clock. And these little simple explanations save you from this kind of shit with hobgoblins, and inevitably the film I'm going to talk about, and probably the film Butler's going to talk about as well, where it's just like, well, you never actually explained anything. You just like, there's just hobgoblins in a vault somewhere, and that's it. And they got loose. There's no explanation of why, there's no history behind it. And so something so simple as to, like, I don't know, even him explaining, or like the older people in the town keeping a secret that this even ever happened, and we have to keep the hobgoblins locked away. But no, it wouldn't go in that much. Like, it's such a blatant ripoff of Gremlins. Like, were you watching it and going, like, this is just a shit Gremlins?
Yeah, but then, like, after a while, I just said, you know what? It's not. Maybe they thought, okay, Gremlins did so well, we can make a low budget version of this and come out, you know, come out with money in our pocket. But after a while, you kind of just stop making the comparison. You're just like, when is this going to be over?
Because I think these things, like these films, seem like they're easy to make, like cheap. Do you know what I mean? And if you can get it, like obviously Hobgoblins failed. I wouldn't say Gremlins cost that much money to make.
Well, like 15 mil budget, right, is still a lot.
How much was it for Gremlins?
11 million.
11 million. Yeah, I mean, it's a lot, well, I suppose. But, like, in the grand scheme of things, of like making films. I don't know, what was 1984? Maybe that was a lot more money than now.
I think it would have been, but I know what you mean in terms of... it had everything, though. You know, Gremlins has a good script. It has...
good music.
Yeah, very good music. And good acting as well. It has everything to make a good movie. This doesn't have anything. And I think that's the perfect point to end on, because I really could...
I'll leave it there.
This could be a special in itself.
Yeah.
And obviously, I want to hear about your own movie and Butler's movie as well. So,
yeah. This one's good news anyway, right? So, I'll move on to mine anyway. So, mine... now, bearing in mind, I've never seen Troll 1. Because Troll 1 was 30%, and I'd be fucked if I was going to watch Troll 1 and then watch Troll 2 just for the podcast. Fuck that. It's obviously a completely different film, because I had to look up the first one and just be like, okay, well, is there something I'm missing? Or I don't know. It doesn't seem like a continuation. It just seems like, let's just make another one. And the funny thing about it is, like, Troll is about a troll that lives in like a building in New York. And Troll 2. I don't know why they didn't change the name, or just don't do a Troll 2. Like, obviously, Troll 1 wasn't popular enough to make a Troll 2. It's not like, oh, we have to call it Troll 2 because then, you know, the fans won't know that it's a, you know, it's the same person making it or whatever the fuck. But they're not even called trolls in the film. They're called goblins. Not once is the word troll said in Troll 2. Not once in the entire hour and a half of the film. But look, I'm already getting off topic, but I'm going a bit wild already. So this film has 5% on Rotten Tomatoes, nicely falls in below the 10%. It actually spawned a documentary that came out in 2009, I think it was, and it was actually directed and made by the kid that's in this, like, sort of the main character is the kid. He's like the child star. And it's, I think it's called, what is it called?
Why Best was he in this movie?
Yeah, Best Worst Movie. I think he made his money out of this. Like, in this party, I might actually give it a watch. This documentary actually has 94% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow.
And it's an hour and a half, yeah. But anyway, look, I'll get back to the actual Troll 2 film. So I'll give you the synopsis. When young Joshua learns that he'll be going on vacation with his family to a small town called Nilbog. This is in America, a town called Nilbog. He protests adamantly. He's warned by the spirit of his deceased grandfather that goblins populate the town. His parents, Michael and Diana, dismiss his apprehensions, but soon learn to appreciate their son's warnings. Guided by his grandfather's ghost, will Joshua and his family stand a chance against fighting off these evil beings? So that's actually a great synopsis, because like the start of the film, it opens and it's just a granddad and he's reading the book to the kid, and the mom like opens the bedroom door and he's reading him a story about goblins or whatever and telling him, oh, goblins are real for some reason, right? And the mom bursts in, she's like, who are you talking to? Turns out the granddad's dead for a while and he can talk to his granddad's ghost. That's a whole other thing. And so for some reason, they don't explain that, like, oh, did the granddad know about goblins the whole time? Was he like a goblin fighter? Or, you know, why does he know about goblins? Or is this something that he picked up in the afterlife? No one really knows. So basically the dad decides that he's going to do a house swap with a family in this town called Nilbog, because the dad apparently always wanted to be a farmer, but he's lived this big city life. And essentially they're like, well, you know, our family will come live on your farm and you go live in our house for a month in whatever fucking city it is, let's say Chicago. And obviously, you know, from the get-go, things are off and the whole town turns out to be fucking trolls in disguise, or not even trolls, excuse me, goblins. Because as I said, the word troll is never mentioned. And what's hilarious is Nilbog is just goblin backwards. And like the kid figures that out by looking in like a mirror, and he's like, oh my god, the town is called Goblin. but it's just like I can't stress how bad, first of all, the writing is, how bad the acting is. The dad in it is a dentist in real life who decided that he wanted to get into acting all of a sudden, and this was the first film that he did. He's fucking diabolical, and he's from Alabama, and he has this kind of strange accent. But like, the writing is such a big thing for it, because, say for example, like his granddad's ghost just appears every now and again, and like gives him advice on like, you know, you got to stop this, you got to do this. This is how you stop the goblins. I keep going to say troll because the film's called Troll. But like goblins, apparently. But then like he keeps appearing in the mirror. I don't know if you remember like the Power Rangers TV show, you know, with Zordon, and he was like a big floating head. Like he pairs like Zordon in the fucking mirror, like a big head that talks to him. Like he's a fucking Power Ranger. But so the mad thing about the granddad being a ghost is not only does he have this like knowledge of goblins for some reason, he also has superpowers.
Of course.
I don't know why. Of course, but why not? Why not? Do you know what I mean? We know so little about ghosts. Maybe they do have superpowers. But basically, you know, they're all standing there. And the thing is that these goblins basically eat people, but not in the way that you think. So they're vegetarians. So you have to eat this special substance that apparently they've learned to bake and make into every single food on the planet. And if you eat that, then you slowly start turning into a human plant hybrid, and then they eat you. And so the whole family sit down, and the place is filled with food, and they start eating the food. Well, they go to eat the food essentially, and of course Zordon appears, and you know, he's like, you can't let them eat the food. And they're all like really slowly about to take a bite, and all of a sudden one of the granddad's superpowers for some reason appears, is that he's like, you have 30 seconds to stop this. I'll stop time for 30 seconds, and like freezes everybody. And it's like, why is that?
A Zach Morris?
Yeah, like this is the thing. And obviously they're all terrible actors, so their hands are like fucking shaking as they're trying to like stay in place. Like the dad has a drink in his hand, and the fucking green goo is just moving around. But the kid is like going around. He's like, oh my God, how do we stop them eating this food? I mean, he could have done a number of things. Slapped the food out of their hand, throwing all the food on the ground. What does he do? He stands up on the table, unzips his trousers, and pisses all over the food. Pisses all over the food. So the food's ruined. They have to go up. The dad brings them up to his room and drops this fucking line that I just like, who taught it? I mean, the director's Italian, and I think he wrote, you know, maybe it's because like English is a second language, but you know, he scolds his son and like basically looks like he's about to take his belt off to hit him. And he's like, what are you going to do to me, daddy? And he's like, I'm going to tighten my belt a couple of notches to stave off the hunger pains. I said, what? And that was it. That was it. He walks out of the room. It was the weirdest. And it's just, it goes on like that. There's just these weird lines. And obviously the whole town are trolls. They're trying to eat people. And it has this famous scene where there's like this witch, apparently for some reason, who controls the goblins. And this guy is like a friend of his sister's boyfriend that followed them on this fucking holiday because they want to bang women. That's the only reason they're there. And he ends up seeing a half-naked woman run through the forest, so he follows her, of course. She's actually getting attacked by the goblins. And then for some reason, the witch like freezes him. And this is probably the worst piece of acting in the whole film. Basically, she starts turning into a plant, and then the goblins start eating her. And they're like, he's just standing there, really static. And he's like, oh my God, they're eating her. And then they're going to eat me. Oh my God. And that's it. And it like, but he's so still and so static, and there was nothing in it. It's like that. You didn't even try. You really didn't try there at all. I could go on. Like this could be a whole episode. I don't even know. Like I've so much more to say about this film. I don't know where to stop myself. Like the costumes, it's obviously little people in the goblin outfits. They're fucking terrible. The ending, terrible. The acting, terrible. The kid, ugliest leading child I've ever seen in my entire life. I know that shouldn't be a point, but I was like, Jesus, he's hard to look at. Kind of like fucking, what's that film? The Mask, not the Jim Carrey one, but the one where he's deformed.
Rocky Dennis.
That's the one.
Yeah.
He looks like Rocky Dennis a little bit. Nice. You know, he turned out pretty normal looking, you know, I can see him here in the picture, but yeah, it's just like again, like the granddad, his superpower come into it later again. He can summon lightning for some reason, lights one of the goblins on fire. The goblins have the power to send him back to hell for some reason. I don't know why, but it's just all this stuff mixed in, and it makes literally no sense. And then to stop the goblins, literally, it's the power of goodness. So that their power comes from this rock from Stonehenge, apparently. And all the kid has to do is put his hands on it and believe. And that kills the goblins. And it's the laziest piece of writing I've ever seen in my entire life. They're like, oh, fuck, we never wrote how they stopped the goblins. I don't know. The power of goodness sounds great. Put it down. It's just... I could go on and on about how bad this film is because it baffled me how bad it was. Like I actually can't find anywhere how much it cost to make the film. I can only assume 50 quid because like your man, the guy that plays the dad, just like, I know, like you were saying, Gogan, earlier on, it's like the writing didn't help them. They're bad actors as it is. Now, the kid may be ugly, but he was the best actor in it. But it's just, I don't know, like the writing, as I said, I think maybe the guy, his English is a second language, fair play to him for writing the script in English, but like, I was sitting there today watching it and I was like, I was in awe of how bad it was.
Yeah.
And things would happen, like as I said, like the grandpa having these random superhero powers. I was like, why is that a thing? Like, that's never explained. Like, why is a ghost have, and he's like, I can come back into physical form for 10 minutes only and that's it. And he's like, I don't know. It's stop me now because I'll just go on forever.
Well, I was going to say, I have an estimated figure here for the budget. But I kind of want you to have a guess at it because obviously you've watched the movie.
Okay. So, and so how much was Hobgoblins?
15,000.
15,000. Okay.
And when was this made? This was 90s, was it?
This is 1990, although it seems like 1981 for some reason because there's a whole scene of the sister working out in a room. She looks underage and it was very creepy.
So 2 years after Hobgoblins.
It's 2 years after Hobgoblins. I want to say probably are in and around the same amount, but I feel like it's higher and they somehow wasted the money. I'm going to go with like 35.
65,000.
Fuck off.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I was watching the trailer there, obviously with no sound on, and probably better off watching it with no sound. But it looks horrendous, and the costumes of the goblins, not the trolls, are.
Where did that 65 grand go? Where did that go? It's in this, like, they have like this weird, the whole thing is just bizarre as well. Like the fucking, even the townspeople, like I know they're trolls in or goblins in disguise, but they're terrible. And like people just, like the writing, it's like at one stage, your man is like becoming like a half tree in a plot somewhere and pot somewhere. And this random man in the town that one of the teenagers had never met in his entire life, and he's in this town for the first time. He's like, hey, your friend is looking for you. And he's like, who? Your friend. It's like, Tom? Yeah, that's him. He said to meet him in the house that looks like an old church. Oh, okay, yeah. He's like, yeah, so if you just go through the woods there, it's just about a half mile that way. Oh, thanks. He didn't even know your man's name. You had to tell him. Like, what the fuck? Like, where that I'm just wondering where that 65 grand went. Like, the film is in such a small area as well. Give me 65 grand. If someone is listening to this, give me 65 grand and I will make you a fucking far better film. Do you know what? I'll take the same plot and I'll make it better.
Count me give in. Me this 65 grand.
That's my 10 cents. That's my 65 grand.
So, Butler, what was your movie then?
Yeah, so keeping the theme of like weird little things that eat people, I went with Critters 3. As I had the Critters box set when I was like 14 or 15, and I liked these movies, and I saw it gets a big fat zero on Rotten Tomatoes, and I thought, like, all right, I'm gonna go in here with maybe the intention to defend this a little bit. For anyone who is unfamiliar with the Critters franchise, they're like these little furry aliens, they've got sharp teeth, they drive an intergalactic spaceship to Earth to eat people and cause general mischief. They can shoot spikes out of their backs, and they have this kind of weird super Sonic the Hedgehog ball speed thing where they kind of roll up to a ball and they kind of jump and attack people, and they can kind of grow to varying sizes. Yeah, they're great. So this one is Critters 3, 1991, directed by Christine Peterson, and it marks the movie debut of Leonardo DiCaprio. So I think, you know, right away I've trumped you guys regards of like acting ability here in the movie. And basically the plot to this one is, so like in the first two movies, it was a town called Grover's Bend and the critters came at everyone. And then these bounty hunters from space arrived to kind of kill off the rest of the critters. And the local nutjob alcoholic becomes like an intergalactic bounty hunter with them. Kind of think like...
It sounds amazing.
I think Randy Quaid from Independence Day, but much, much dumber. So he goes off to space and comes back in the third one to pursue the remaining critters. And the critters hitch a ride on an RV to the city, and they kind of basically take over like a rundown kind of Hey Arnold-esque apartment building and start kind of eating the tenants one by one. And Leonardo DiCaprio and his stepdad turn up and kind of like a group of survivors and stuff. And then the intergalactic hillbilly comes and kind of kills all of them but two. And then like the Intergalactic Space Council tell them, no, don't kill the last two. We need them. And then it's kind of like a cliffhanger. And if you didn't want to see the first two, the great thing about Critters 3 is 10 minutes into it, it actually does a movie recap of the first two. Wow. So it's like 8 minutes of footage from the first two movies that they just pieced together.
just stitch it. We're 8 minutes short.
Oh, exactly. I can't remember the first two.
Recap. So, that
it was really convenient for me. Look, I don't think it deserves to be a zero. I mean, I'd have it in around like a 9% maybe.
This deserved a zero. I don't know who gave this 5. This deserves a zero. Even watch the trailer. Like Ogun said, watch the trailer of this. It's fucking horrible.
I'm going to check it out in a bit. But look, here's the thing. I'll defend these movies a little bit. Like Hobgoblins and... Trolls. No, it's just like... Here's the thing about these movies is... You get what you pay for. Like, it's not like... For example, I watched The Many Saints in Newark 2 weeks ago, and it was fucking terrible. It was awful. It was like, it was up there one of the worst movies I watched this year. But like, you're expecting, so you have all this material and money and talent to work with, and you get crap. Whereas like, you're not going to get anything. I know you say we can probably make a better movie with $65,000 than Trolls 2 or Hobgoblins or whatever. But you still, like, I think these movies need to be reviewed like a little bit differently to the average
movie. Troll, not trolled. Correction.
A troll. I'm sorry. Like, yeah, they're still awful movies, but I'd review them with a lot more patience than like movies that are trying to be like this amazing piece of cinema and they're crap.
Oh yeah. Like, I can get what you mean, right? And don't get me wrong, because you know I have a love of like shitty 80s films and bad action films and all the likes. But the thing about this is it's that bad. It's that bad that you can't even go, it is what it is. Do you know what I mean? Because when someone knocks out something like Gremlins, you're like, oh, amazing. Like, I love, what's that one? It's not a good film. What's the one with the fucking Tremors? Love Tremors.
It's not really highly rated. It's like 80-something percent there, so when we're looking for movies.
Tremors holds up. I like Tremors.
I love Tremors. But, again, it's like you're not going into Tremors. Like you're saying, you're not going in. Like, you went in for The Many Saints in New York, which I knew would be terrible, and I'm actually annoyed at how its rating on Rotten Tomatoes, because I watched the first 10 minutes, and Ray Liotta should pack it in or just never do a character like that again. Like, I get what you mean, but I don't know. I haven't seen Hobgoblins, so I can't speak for it, but I assume Goblin's on the same track here. I love bad films, and you're like, you can kind of find them funny, and there's films like that, and I love actually finding these types of films where you're like, I love watching these hungover because I know it's going to be silly and shit, but it's still good. But this is just that bad. The acting was that bad. The writing was that bad that it's like, this is actually more of an annoyance than anything.
I understand. Do you think that maybe with Trolls and potentially Hobgoblins, is that troll, like the people?
It's Troll.
Sorry, it's just Troll.
It's just Troll. I can't. Troll 2 Goblins. And
you're
Hobgoblins,
being trolled.
The Trolls. What was my point?
Sorry. trolled you good?
Yeah. Do you think with these movies, though, is like, they know they're not going to make a good movie. They know it. So they're like, yo, I'm going to pack as much bonkers shit into this as possible to make it infamous. Because I'd rather it be really, really bad and remembered than just forgettable straight away. Because people are still like, you're watching Hobgoblins and Trolls now, albeit it's for a podcast and it's by Flew. Yeah. But it's better than, there's probably like, you know, who remembers Friday the 13th 5, you know? But at least these have their own little piece of cinema history to them.
Well, I agree with you, right? But I don't think when Claudio Fragasso decided to make this film that he was like, I'm going to make a piece so bad that it's going to be good. I genuinely think that he thought this was terrifying and good. And I think everyone does. It's like The Room. He made that film thinking that it was a fucking masterpiece. And it's become so famous for being so bad. Like, this was made even more famous by the kid who was in it making a documentary about it. I don't think it was ever intended to be, I'm going to make a shit film and, you know, that's how it's going to become famous. Like, meeting people who are creatives who make this type of stuff, these are their babies, their brainchilds. And this guy obviously thought, this is fucking brilliant. I'm a genius.
I think I saw an interview with him. And he said it was a commentary about fascism in Italy.
The goblins represent Mussolini and his regime.
I think that's a perfect point as well. I was going to say to wrap it up on, but I feel like you had another point to come in on there, but
not really, just in regards to the Critters franchise. You know, I'm not going out my way to actually recommend anybody watch any of them, but I still think it doesn't deserve to be a big fat zero.
I've never actually, Critters is one of the ones that I haven't seen, and I do like these little random, you know, puppety creatures films from the 80s. I'll have to watch the first one. The first one good? Like, do you like the first one?
The first, it's either the first or the second one that's actually good. And there's a really memorable scene that it's like Easter in the town. And there's this guy in a big bunny suit. And they leave all the Easter eggs kind of around the church and the local park. And all the kids are going. But like the eggs are kind of like, are near like the critter's eggs. So then there's like this guy in the bunny suit, and he's looking around. One of the critters gets in and starts eating his area. And it's just like, he's in the bunny suit, and he's like, rah, rah. And then it cuts away to like, they're in church, and the priest is just like, and now we'll bow our heads in a moment, remember the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. And the bunny just comes smashing through the church window, like from the window downwards. And everyone's like, ah! And you just see the bunnies being ravaged from the inside. So I remember that as a child. I was like, I'm not going to mass again.
And thus started, you know, apart from the molestation, you know, my love for the church waned.
And my crippling fear of bunnies.
Priests.
Yeah. And priests in bunny costumes. But look, that's kind of our little wrap around on obscure miniature monster movies. We always said, and hopefully we'll do one sometime, is we want to do like a B movie special, Attack of the 54 Transvestites or whatever the movies are.
I didn't sign up for this.
Cherry cut that one. I get what you mean. I would really look forward to doing like a B movie special, but like, you know, B movies that are actually good. Do you know what I mean? Because you like, or maybe one or two bad ones in there, because it's always funny to rant about bad shit. But like, there's definitely those B movies that you're like, actually, you know what? This is actually very enjoyable, and I'd love to do one like that, like an episode on that. Definitely.
Yeah, there's some like I remember watching like in The Blob as a kid. So there's definitely ones that we could do. But anyway, that's for a different podcast. That's just a little teaser to the audience. You know, like, never stop listening, because we'll find you. But we'll move on to the over 90s movies that we collected this week. Galgan, do you want to jump in with yours?
Cheers, Butler. I've gone for Bone Tomahawk, a movie that comes in at 91% on Rotten Tomatoes. As I was saying off air earlier on, I don't think it deserves the 91%. I feel it's a good movie, but maybe a bit too highly ranked with RT. I know we don't go off IMDb, but that gets 7.1 out of 10. It probably should be between that and 7.4, 7.5. I'll give a brief description here. In the Old West, a sheriff, his deputy, a gunslinger, and a cowboy embark on a mission to rescue three people from a savage group of cave dwellers. The sheriff is played by Kurt Russell, who I must admit plays a really cool looking sheriff. Man has class and style. Mm. His deputy, Richard Jenkins, at the start of the movie, I was like, this guy is going to do my head in. Turns out to probably be the best guy in the movie. Just one of those characters you kind of get to love as the movie goes on. With this movie and this review, I don't really know how much I want to go into it in case people want to watch it. I don't want to give anything away. So I'll try to stick as much to that description without kind of giving any spoilers. It's runtime 2 hours, 13 minutes. I think it's perfect time. You know, 2 hours is usually a perfect time for a movie. This is probably a long 2 hours. Not a lot happens in the movie. There is a lot of dialogue, you know, there's a lot of character growth. And it maybe is a bit slow to kind of get going. But with that in mind, I suppose to add on to that description, the mission to rescue three people. Three people are the cowboy Patrick Wilson's wife, the other deputy sheriff, and a prisoner that happened to be in the jail cell. What happened was at the start of the movie, the prisoner embarks upon this group of cave dwellers, kills his friend, and he runs back to the town that the sheriff is based in. He's not from the town, but when the sheriff bumps into him, he's like, okay, you're not from around here. What are you doing? My deputy saw you burying all these goods outside the village, locks him up. But before he locks him up, the prisoner tries to run away. Kurt Russell shoots him in the foot, and he's then locked up in the prison. The cowboy in this, he is he's recently sprained his foot and is unable to pretty much fully walk. So his wife, who is the sub doctor of the town, is taking care of him. The main doctor of the town is too drunk to come look after the prisoner, so they ask the wife to come. Unbeknown, the cave dweller has followed the prisoner back to this town and then finds the prisoner and kidnaps him, the wife, and the deputy sheriff. Went the long way around there in terms of giving a background of it, but that's why they embark on the mission. In terms of the mission itself, this is probably where the movie starts to get going a little bit. You know, there's a bit of character building. It takes too long to get to the final point. Maybe take half an hour out in the movie, and it could easily be done. You might lose a little bit of quality. As I said, Kurt Russell is fantastic throughout. Richard Jenkins really comes into it. And Matthew Fox, who I'm not a massive fan of, you were saying, Butler, you liked him from Lost. I didn't really like him with it. I could take or leave it, but he's fantastic in this as well.
I'm Party of Five.
Never seen it.
Like a 90s drama thing.
I don't recommend.
I can see why, but look, it's a good movie. I think, if I was to be honest, I was probably about three quarters away through the movie, and I was like, in terms of horror, I've probably got away with one here. Horror is not my favorite genre. Don't really like them, like those types of movies. So I was like, okay, I've got away with one here. The last quarter of the movie, yeah. Not scary, but more gory, and certainly leaves some scenes in the memory and some scenes that will probably take a while to get out of my head. But yeah, I have you seen it before, guys?
Yeah.
You like it?
I thought it was great. I thought it was a great film. I like Butler, I think. Love That just sounds as I like Butler.
Yeah.
thank you.
I didn't finish my sentence quick enough. I like Butler like westerns. I love a good western, modern western. Yeah, well, there is good older westerns, but some of them are a bit ridiculous. But you know, I thought it was great. But I'm one of these people that's like, oh, okay, we're desensitized to most things, you know, we're adults at this rate. But a certain death scene in that film haunted me for weeks on end. Like, it goes into this list of films that I'm like, I don't know if I can watch that again because I know what's coming and I can't watch it, or I might just not watch that scene, including like the very popular Saving Private Ryan. There's a death scene in Saving Private Ryan that just upsets me more than anything, that I'm just like, I don't want to watch that. It just makes me sad and angry watching it. And I can't appreciate the film.
That's the scene I'm talking about as well. That's going to take a while to...
It's going to be... It's burned into your retinas for a while. Like, do you know what I mean? You'll be seeing that when you sleep. Every time you close your eyes, you're going to be seeing someone fucking... I don't know if I want to... I'd love to explain the scene, but...
Yeah, I'm just saying, but because it's such a highly ranked movie, you know, I don't know if people will... people mightn't have seen it, people might have seen it, you know, what we're talking about, but...
Very small budget.
I didn't actually take note of the budget. Do you have it there?
1.8 million.
Tell you what.
10 million less than Gremlins.
There you go. It bombed the box office, 481,525.
I think those movies always will, I think.
Yeah. I mean, very popular. I mean, I'm a big Kurt Russell fan. He was great in it. I thought everybody was great in it. That was very well acted, very good cinematography, like a very gritty western. I know it's like a western horror, but like, to this day, I'm like, I don't know. Maybe we could have done without, but maybe that scene makes it infamous. Do you know what I mean? Maybe it adds to that 91% that it's like people are remember it for that scene. But I'm like, damn, I probably could have done without that.
Yeah, I'll give a shout out as well to the wife that's in it, Lily Simmons. Absolute beauty. We know her from Banshee. We know her from Banshee. But look, if I was the sheriff, I'd be joining them on that fucking rescue mission. What a prize.
Richard Jenkins as well, the dad from Separatist.
Is that him? I was looking at the movie and I was like, I do
know. I was waiting for you to say it and I was like, surely Goblin recognized him, but he is, yeah, I suppose.
He's a completely different type of character, I suppose.
Oh, yeah. He doesn't do a T-Rex impression in that.
And you know, I should have, like, obviously Colin's character or his name out there, but yeah, look, just one of those looking at it, I was like, I know what you're from, but I just can't put my finger on it. But yeah, overall, it was a good movie. No complaints apart from maybe it should have just been a little bit lower on the ranking side of things. But I'm happy it wasn't, because it was a good horror / western movie to watch.
There you go. It is a good one. I would recommend it, and I have recommended it before. I'm surprised Jerry likes it so much.
I'm actually talking about it since I've watched it, but
editor and on a lesser scale, Gogan's dad. But for the people listening, Jerry, you know, Jerry edits the show and he doesn't like certain things, you know, cursing and the likes. I'm surprised at how gory this film is, but then again, you know, like he likes
westerns as well,
horror, you know, as well, like the horror films as well. Do you know what I mean? So I mean, yeah, I don't know. He's an enigma. Maybe we'll get him on one day. Do you know what I mean? You know, when I always make reference to, like, we've got our sound editor here in the background. I'd love to get him on, get his opinion.
Jerry the editor special.
I think we should actually, Jerry, get on. That'd be hilarious.
Anyway, I've got much to say. I Bone Tomahawk's great. Westerns are great. Most horror movies are great. Matthew Fox is great. So yeah, we'll leave it at that. We'll go over to Ferguson's movie.
I actually, not that I struggled, but like horror wouldn't be my favorite genre. But then, you know, like looking for a film over 90% kind of opened my eyes a little bit more, that it's a lot more of a broad genre than you think it is, because like you have something like Bone Tomahawk, which is classed as a horror, like it's the genre that it's in, it's a horror western. Like I wouldn't like your I mean I've seen them, but like you're kind of like standard ghost films or whatever the fuck. It's probably my least favorite genre. I wouldn't say I don't like it, because I do like these types of films. And from searching them, I'm like, you know what, I'm actually a big sci-fi horror fan. Do you know, I like Alien, I love The Thing. There's loads of films like that always fall into that kind of bracket. And when I was looking them up, I was like, surely The Thing is over 90%. And it's shy by 2%, 88, which I think is scandalous, because I think it's a great film.
Yeah, I was thinking about it as myself. I did a Google search as well for
it. Yeah, straight away, it was the first thing I thought of. I was like, I'm going to do The Thing, because I love that film and I'd love to do a little blurb on it. But 88%, and I was like, no, do you know what? I'll stick to it. And I had seen one recently. I'd seen, I was talking to you before, Butler, before we started. I had seen Fright Night there a couple of weeks ago. A good film. It has like 95% of Rotten Tomatoes, which I think is a little high. Like, it's a good film, don't get me wrong. But it's like you know, Bone Tomahawk, where it's like, does it deserve that high, really? So I was like, you know what? I'll watch something I haven't seen. So I went for this film, Reanimator. I was kind of researching it. It's like a cult classic, you know, has like a big following. It's based off a H.P. Lovecraft book. Or it's not even a book, actually. It's a short story. It's called Herbert West Reanimator. That's the name of the Herbert West is the lead character in it. Side note, H.P. Lovecraft, massive racist. Huge. I mean, like... And hated Irish people as well.
Wow. I just wasn't expecting a side note there, but...
Yeah, I mean, actually, I was reading something about him earlier on, because obviously there's that TV show about Lovecraft County, and it's like all about his books and that kind of stuff, but it also touches a lot on how much of a racist he was. Admired Hitler, doesn't like black people, hates Irish people as well, because he believes that he's of Anglo-Saxon origin. And he made a comment about Irish people. I know this can be off topic, but he made a comment about Irish people, saying that, you know, if Irish people, you know, because he was like around like the 20s, around that kind of era, 1910 to 1920s, around then. And he was like, if Irish people, you know, want independence, they should have it if they were strong enough to get it. And if they ever got it, it's only a matter of time before they lose it, because the Anglo-Saxons are, you know, born to be dominant and blah, 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 blah. Basically saying that we were an inferior race of people. I can't believe it. And the shock that I, like, of reading this earlier on, this is why I'm bringing it up, is because his books are continually adapted into films, into TV shows. I'm like, yeah, I mean, they're great. He wrote some great stuff. But if someone was that blatant of a racist and a bigot, like, why are we still remaking his stuff? Do you know what I mean? I know, and I appreciate Lovecraft County, because I'm like, at least it touches on it, and it actually reads out a line where he basically calls black people monkeys in a passage of his book. It's mad. Completely off topic. I'll go back to Reanimator anyway, which is one of his adaptations. Apologies. I just wanted to bring that up because I thought it was mad.
You're also now giving Reanimator free publicity.
I am. I know. This is the thing. Like, now I'm going to talk about it. I maybe should have saved that for the end, but I was just, I kind of read that very late, and I was like, oh, wow. Okay. But anyway, look, we'll forget about HP for a minute, because we'll just go and say, you know, whoever directed this is the man. Essentially.
Joseph Goebbels.
Yeah. Herman Goebbels. what was your one that directed that?
Lenny Riefenstahl.
Yeah, that was the one. Yeah. Lenny Riefenstahl. She's still alive. this became actually a film series. So the first one, 93%, and I'll say straight off the bat, very, very, very high. And I think it's one of those films that it benefits from the cult status that it drew in. It's a good film, don't get me wrong. Basically, the lead character, Herbert West, develops a serum that can reanimate corpses, essentially, is the whole kind of crux of it. He goes to a medical school where he is kind of like, you know, he's a medical student, but, you know, as a doctor, you're actually in the hospital during the day as well, where you're training. And, you know, he has these wild ideas that, you know, I have this serum, and, you know, there's a whole thing where the teacher is like, the brain can survive, you know, without the body for about 10 to 14 minutes or something like that. And he's raging about that, because he's like, no, it's much longer. But it kind of snowballs from there, and he gets a room living with this other guy, and it kind of goes from there, where he's like experimenting on small animals. He kills your man's girlfriend's cat and reanimates that. I thought it was great. It's great in the sense that it was like, do you know what, this is a bit of crack, and there's good humor in it. There's good enough effects. When the cat was reanimated, it was definitely like a teddy on his back. But, you know, he was putting in a performance that he was getting attacked, and the performance was good enough. But it's very gory, very body horror type film. Very Cronenberg-y in a way. But your man who plays him, Jeffrey Combs, I thought was perfect, because he's so creepy. He was the perfect guy to be someone that was experimenting with a serum like this. He's so off-putting and creepy as a person that if you knew this person in real life, you'd be like, fuck, he's a serial killer. Like, he cuts people up in his spare time, and that's outside of his normal job, where he actually cuts people up. But the film kind of snowballs. You know, he basically, your man, his housemate, catches him reanimating the cat, helps him or whatever. He tells him about the serum, kind of almost blackmails him into helping him out. So they go into the morgue and they start reanimating bodies. One of them comes to life eventually, but when they come to life, he doesn't really get the doses of the serum right. They're not exactly zombies, but, you know, they're alive. They've been reanimated, but there's this whole kind of thing that they're almost being reborn, so they can't really speak or talk, and for some reason they have superhuman strength.
Bit like Evan Peters, season 3 of American Horror Story?
100%. And that's what I was going to say as well. I think that was based on this,
right?
Because he has the kind of like the to tone, he's screaming, he's shouting, and he's in pain. Yeah, exactly. I mean, they don't know why they're in pain and they're just alive again or whatever. But it's a fun film because it mixes horror and gore. Like, you know, eventually the dean is the guy of the college who your man's housemate is going out with his daughter. And he, you know, walks in on them after reanimating this corpse. The reanimated corpse kills him. Then your man kills the corpse, then they reanimate him, and he comes back in this kind of murderous rage or whatever. But then there's this other guy who's like the lecturer, and he basically tries to essentially steal your man's work. So he hits him over the head with a shovel, chops his head off with the shovel. That was very grim. And then reanimates his head and his body separately, which I think leads to the best part of the film, where like his body knocks him out, and then he's carrying around his headless body is carrying around his head, and it's done really well. Like, I was like, that's actually really well done. Like the camera angles, the shots, it looks headless. You know, he's still kind of half out of it, but he's controlling his body. But it turns out he was in love with your man's daughter, also the housemate's girlfriend, the whole time. And there's just this really, really odd scene where, for some reason, because he was reanimated, he can talk to the other reanimated guy, which is actually her dad, lets him loose. He kidnaps her, brings her in, strips her naked, and like his head is in this bowl beside her, strapped to a table naked. Massive bush as well. This is 1985, huge bush on her. And basically his headless body starts feeling her up, and she's like, ah, screaming, like probably like pinching her nipples. And everything is so weird. And then the headless body picks up the head, and he's all covered in blood, and there's blood in his mouth. And he's like, I have always loved you, like pointing it in her face. And then like he starts like licking her nipples and everything like this. And I was like, I don't know, the actress seemed genuinely horrified with what was going on. I would recommend it because it's a bit of fun. There's good horror, there's good gore, and it's got this real dry humor that's quite funny. 93% is very high, and I think that it's one of these ones that it's like it's a cult following, so that's why it's so high.
Okay.
No way in hell, 100%. Maybe somewhere around the '70s for how good a film like this turned out, but 93, very high, very very high. And that's me.
Interesting. I might check it out. If it's yeah, it's not like is you ever seen like The Fly? I was just like, I can't watch The Fly when I'm having like my dinner. Is it like one of those movies?
No, it's not. It's not as bad. It's definitely not as bad. There's a lot of gore and body horror, but like it's there's enough humor in it that it's kind of like it is kind of like ooh. But The Fly is disgusting. Like when he starts peeling off his nails and
that's too much. I remember I got some garlic battered mushrooms out of the chipper for the first time when I was watching The Fly. I can't eat these. I probably shouldn't eat them in general, but The Fly was the nail in the coffin for garlic mushrooms.
Oh, you don't ever eat a garlic mushroom again on that story.
I wouldn't anyway. Christ. But I mean, look, it's Bond, you know, it's one of these ones that I think again, like it did better than expected. Like I said, look, I mean the effects and all are great, bar the odd kind of dodgy one, but it's the campness of it. You know, it's 1995. It's fun. It's funny. Like, I would recommend watching it. It is a bit of crack. But, and as I said, your man who's the lead kind of creepy guy, he's great in it because he's genuinely off-putting. And you're like, I could see you doing this in real life. But it spawned two sequels. One in 1989, Bride of Reanimator. Of course, you know, they're always going to go with that. It's like obviously touching on Frankenstein. And then one in 2003, Beyond Reanimator. Obviously, both did. Absolutely fucking terrible in comparison to the 93%. So, you know, leave it be. Stop a good thing. Stop
reanimating.
Yeah, stop reanimating this film. it's dead. Leave it alone. But yeah, no, you know what? It was great. That's an example of something that's like silly but brilliant.
Very good. All right, I'll round it off and I'll monopolize people's time now for the next 10 minutes with my movie. I picked Misery, which I'll say straight away, 90%, which I'm probably the only one here who picked the movie would actually agree with that score. 90% Misery is a all-time classic. So for anyone who hasn't seen it, it's a 1990 American psychological thriller directed by Rob Reiner, who also did another Stephen King work, did Stand By Me. He's also the dad from The Wolf of Wall Street, Leonardo DiCaprio's dad, if anyone is unfamiliar with him. And it's starring James Caan, Kathy Bates, Lauren Bacall, Richard Farnsworth, and Francis Sternhagen. And it's about an obsessive fan who holds an author captive and forces him to write a story. Very vague synopsis on Wikipedia. But basically, James Caan is a famous writer of kind of these Jane Austen type, Wuthering Heights kind of novels. And his name is Paul Sheldon. And he's just finished writing his last one. And he's driving to get it published. He's in a car crash in the snow. Kathy Bates is his number one fan. She rescues him. And at first, it's kind of like a harmless recovery. But as kind of the film develops, you see that she has no intention of ever letting him leave her house. She's going to hold him captive. There's some nail-biting, tense scenes in this. There's a scene similar to Bone Tomahawk, but I won't spoil it. It's very unnerving in regards of gore and violence. And the kind of the chemistry between these two, Kathy Bates won an Oscar, which is amazing. James Caan's amazing in it. It's kind of like a battle of wit between the two of them. Because you have James Caan, who is obviously the more intelligent from the two, but he's essentially without his body. And then you have Kathy Bates, who is deranged, but she kind of has kind of a big physical presence in the movie, the way she can kind of hold them hostage. The role was, I found it funny, I was looking at a few people who were in talks to do, I was trying to visualize them in the bed. Kevin Klein, Michael Douglas, Harrison Ford, Dustin Hoffman, Robert De Niro, Al Pacino, and Richard Dreyfuss, Gene Hackman, and Robert Redford all passed on this movie. And I don't think, like, I struggled to see maybe Robert Redford, maybe Gene Hackman. I don't know if the rest of them would really work in it. It's one of Stephen King's all-time favorite adaptions. It's in his top 10 of stuff that's of his works have been adapted. And originally, me and Fergus wanted to do like a little bit of a Stephen King Halloween special, but Gogan seems to have some sort of vendetta against Stephen King movies that we've scratched
the surface of. No comment. No, I'm just, you know, I'm not a big horror movie fan, and if it was a special, that means I'd have to watch a Stephen King movie that I don't want to watch. So,
look, he just didn't watch him.
Sure, I won't be around one of the weeks, so you can do your Stephen King special then. In summertime,
that's the point of the whole film. Did you?
My surprise with our Stephen King Christmas special.
Yeah. What everyone wants.
But yeah, look, Misery, I picked it as well because obviously we try and recommend movies to people who listen, and it's a massively famous movie. I don't think it's one that many people have actually seen, so I highly recommend people watch it. It's not so much horror as it's just, it's a thriller, it's tense, but it was on the horror list. I really didn't want to watch anything new, so I was like, I'm going to go to Misery because I've seen it the last year. I've been getting quite lazy with this podcast. Like, you know, it's finished The Man in the High Castle or watch another horror movie. And I'm like, fucking, you know, there's only so much time.
I'm making a movie podcast, not a TV show.
Gogan, have you seen Misery?
No.
Not surprised.
Yeah. But look.
Thanks. You should have, Gogan. It's actually a very good film.
Yeah. I'd love to say that I'd add it to my list, but
there's no clowns on a Gogan.
I was going to say the same thing.
I only did one book about clowns.
Yeah, I'm not afraid of clowns. I watched the Stephen King adaptation to TV shows. You know, like, I've no problem with it, but
Under the Dome. You want to waste people's time talking about Under the Dome, do you?
Look, why are you having to go? I don't like Under the Dome. That's a Jerry favorite. That can be its special itself.
I don't know. Pick.
You know the TV show I'm talking about. I can't remember that it was out 2 years ago.
It's the Mercedes, is it?
No, the one that you recommended to me.
With Ben Mendelsohn.
The Outsider.
The Outsider.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. That was very good.
That was good.
Yeah, look, you can come crawling back now, and I'll take my apology, but
Misery's a great like midweek movie, I feel like. If you watch, like, it's not like what I said, like it's in a horror genre, but it's not actually a scary film. It's more like what I said, it's more unnerving. Like this man is held captive. He can barely walk. And it's just really well done in terms of like him trying to escape, you know, 10 scenes of her coming back, you know, like try to move quicker. She's on the way back. One of those kind of things, you know. It's brilliant. I think it is my favorite Stephen King adaptation.
Yeah. That's a thriller. Like, so that would that be there over Stand By Me and The Shawshank Redemption?
I would say more of the kind of horror genre. Like, I think it's better than oh my God, why is my head? My mind.
The Shining.
Red Room. I like it more than The Shining.
Yeah, well, I love The Shining. I love the labyrinth of The Shining. Like, it's a real fucking mind fuck to pick apart. Misery's more straightforward.
Amazingly done.
And he could have been a good one for this one as well, actually.
He could have, actually, yeah.
Yeah.
Either part.
Yeah, he's got lots of amazing ones. I won't list them off because I don't want to agitate Gogan any further.
Whoa!
there's a good few. There's a good few of his movies on Netflix, I think. Like, Fergus, you wanted to watch, I haven't seen it. I'm gonna watch I added to my list there in 1922.
Yeah,
90% wasn't it?
That's 91%. I actually, that was going to be my film for this. But I don't know, Reanimator just jumped on me. I still probably will watch 1922. Thomas Jane, the main character in it. It does look good. I've seen a trailer for it. What'd you say?
He's hung.
Thomas Jane is hung.
Yeah, he's in a show called Hung.
Oh, I thought you said he's hung. I was like, when did you see his knob?
In the show. Hung.
Oh, really?
Well, no, he's like an out of work dad, and he makes a living doing porn because he's got a massive penis. It's called Hung.
We got that.
Is it prosthetics or is he really packing heat?
Well, Thomas Jane seems like I say he's a well endowed man.
I did like his Punisher film.
But anyway, back to your movie.
No, I don't want to talk about Thomas Jane's dick for a little longer.
Did you actually see our first special guest on?
There was actually a really good viral video that went around for the anniversary of this film.
Misery.
Yeah.
No.
So, and what was great about it is that I think even people who saw the film didn't cop on at first, but people who've never seen the film or read the book would have been like, oh my God. So basically, this woman goes into a bookshop, and it was pegged as like this woman just going mental, having a rant at someone who works in a bookshop, but she was an actress. The people in the bookshop didn't know, the people working there didn't know there was hidden cameras. She went in and she was dressed as Kathy Bates' character, and she was like, I'm looking for the new Paul Sheldon book. And your man was like, I don't know who that is. Don't have it. It's like Paul Sheldon. And she starts listing off the books that he wrote in Misery. And he's like, no, I'm not seeing that. He's like, what do you mean you don't know who Paul Sheldon is? Paul Sheldon, Pulitzer Prize winner, 5-time this, blah, blah, blah. And she starts going mental. And people in the comments were like, oh my God, what a fucking loser. What a bitch. Like, blah, 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 going mad at that guy. But it was all like a plot, and it was a thing to celebrate. Because she's obviously a fanatic. So, like, people thought it was just a video of a random woman in a bookshop, but it was all a thing from Misery. I thought it was quite clever.
That is good. I'll look that up. I don't have much else to say on the movie. So, if anyone else has anything to chime in on?
No, I haven't seen it, so unfortunately, nothing from myself.
David, you're missing out. I really do think you'd like it.
I'll add it to the list.
I didn't care what like was
that. I haven't made a dent on that list in a while.
Just lacking.
Well, I keep getting movies like fucking Hobgoblins to watch. You know, I'm never going to make a dent.
Yeah, watching that man, the Shy Castle as well.
Oh, you're two against one here, Ferg. I've converted Butler, so you're next.
We'll see. But I think that's us then.
That is us. Yes, thank you for listening. And for anyone who has been to these, I never know how to wrap these up. So I'm torn between just saying goodnight and thank you or reading The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe.
Shout out to the two fans who have mentioned us this week as well.
Yes, and we've a list of birthdays to call out. We've happy birthdays. Connor, age 7 in Wexford, the Mom I'm Making Movie podcast guys wish you a happy birthday. Watch Reanimator. Watch it.
Well, thank you. Good luck.